Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. We live in a world where temptations are rocketing from all sides. How do we strengthen the intellect to control the mind? Well, let's talk about temptations. Why are they so difficult to overcome? I mean, we've got so many temptations in the world, but they fall into only a few categories. They're all things that make us feel better, or we think will make us feel better. So temptations to eat things we shouldn't eat, temptations to drink things we shouldn't drink, temptations to maybe have relations with people with whom we shouldn't have relations. Those are the most superficial layer. If I eat that, I will feel good. If I drink that, I will feel good. If I smoke that, I will feel good. If I engage in sensual pleasures with this person, I will feel good. Outer layer of temptations. And they're very difficult for a lot of people. I remember personal story. When I was young, my mother was always on a diet. It's just sort of what people in Los Angeles do. Everybody diets. And my mother's always been very, very thin, but nonetheless, she was always on a diet. And I remember one time we had gone out to eat, and my dad is someone who has always really loved desserts. Now, he's got great discipline. He's a very healthy eater, but you're on vacation. We had gone to Palm Springs for vacation, and we had gone out for a nice dinner. And my dad ordered a hot fudge sundae for dessert. And he and my mom were sitting next to each other in the booth, and I was on the other side. And my dad is also very, very methodical and slow. Not slow in a mentally slow way, but just slow in a very calm way. Very peaceful, takes his time. And my mother's much more kind of frenetic energy. And so they're sitting together, the hot fudge sundae comes, my dad is just surveying it, maybe taking in how beautiful it looks. And my mom, by this point, has already picked up her spoon and is eating my dad's hot fudge sundae. And of course, you know, he's very happy to share. The thing was huge. And by the time my dad actually has picked up his spoon to have his first bite, my mom has already had two or three or four bites. And then she decided, that's enough. Like, I'm on a diet. This is a hot fudge sundae. I shouldn't be having it. And so she picks up her glass of water and pours it on top of the hot fudge sundae. That was the end of the hot fudge sundae. I share the story because temptations are so much. I mean, the normal thing would be, well, why didn't she just stop eating it? Like, let your dad eat it. Why did mom have to actually ruin the hot fudge sundae? Because when we're in the grips of temptation, particularly when we are depriving ourselves or disciplining ourselves or controlling ourselves, it feels like a deprivation. And when it feels like a deprivation, the temptation takes on a life of its own. Otherwise, you think, here is this well-educated, intelligent, wonderful woman. What's a hot fudge sundae got on her? Like, I mean, she's decided she's not going to eat anymore. She doesn't have to ruin it. She could just put down her spoon. But temptations take on this power of their own. I had to eat the chocolate. So that's our superficial layer temptations. Things we're going to take in that are going to make us feel physically good. Go a step deeper, and the temptations become things we're going to do that may not be physically gratifying or rewarding in the moment, but that are going to make us feel good later on. The temptation to cheat on an exam. We know it's wrong. Teacher goes out to use the bathroom, or teacher's back is turned. The smartest kid in class is sitting next to you. There's this overpowering temptation. I don't know the answer. Maybe I should just, while the teacher's not here, catch a glimpse. Temptation to cheat in so many other ways, to cheat on your taxes, to cheat. So many opportunities the world gives us not to be honest. There are things that we think are going to make us feel better. If I get an A on this exam, whether through merit or not through merit, I'll do well, I'll get into the right university, I'll get the right job. If I cheat on my taxes, I'll have more money. So every temptation looms itself over us with this hypnotic call that if you engage in me, you will feel better. The temptation to shop. We're walking down the street. There's a new dress, a coat, a sweater, a pair of shoes in the window, shouting at us, if you just wear me, own me, you'll feel better. We had no intention of doing it, but the temptation becomes overwhelming. There's a great story. The friend of a wonderful meditation teacher. So the meditation teacher shares the story of a friend of his who every day would go into this pastry store on the way to work, right when he got off the bus on his way to get to work. And every day he would get off the bus, go into this pastry store, buy these pastries, and then go to work. But then the friend decided to exercise discipline over his diet and to stop eating the pastries. So every day he would make this pledge, I'm not going to eat the pastries. But nonetheless, he found himself every day in the pastry store. And so he goes to the meditation teacher, a friend of his, and says, I don't know what to do. Every day I pledge I'm not going to buy these pastries. And every day, without knowing even what's happened, I find myself with this bag full of the pastries on my way to the office. And the meditation teacher says, well, one possibility is you leave your wallet at home. And the guy says, what? You want me to steal them? So this is what happens. I mean, they're so overpowering that even though we have an intention not to, even though we think I'm not going to do it. It's so powerful that if I have to, I'm going to steal to eat them. The trick or the answer, the solution, is not about controlling them. Because you'll control the pastries, then you control the cake, then you control the hot fudge sundae, then you control the alcohol, then you control the cigarettes, then you discipline yourself to be loyal to your spouse, then you discipline yourself not to cheat. It's constant. The universe is full, as the question says. Temptations are rocketing everywhere we look. The only solution is to understand that within, I'm already full. The only solution is what we talk about, intellect. Not the intellect that you get in college or university or in books, but the real power of discrimination that makes us understand I am not my senses. I am not this chemical and electrical pattern in my brain that says eat or drink or smoke. That's what's going on in our brain. It's just a pattern. It's a pattern of electrical and chemical firing that has formed a neural circuit with our reward center. That's all it is. But every time we give in, what we're doing is we're telling ourselves, all I am is a light bulb. Circuitry goes up, I'm on. Circuitry goes down, I'm off. All I am is chemical and electrical patterns of behavior. No. We've talked so much over the last few nights about who we are, about the divinity of who we are. And the best way to overcome any of the temptations is not through discipline. It's not this, I'm not going to have it. Because today, as I said, today it becomes the hot fudge sundae. Tomorrow it's the cookie. The next day it's the cigarette. The day after it's the whiskey. But is to recognize, who am I? And this is where spiritual austerities come in. If you look at the Hindu tradition, the Indian spiritual practices, what you're going to find is so many practices of austerities. We fast. We stay up all night.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Pooja Swamiji, when he was young and in the jungle, spent 11 hours a day standing on one foot. Why? His guru was not in the muscle building business. You know, it was not that he was, you know, training Pooja Swamiji to win some sort of yoga competition or athletic competition award. Why do we stay up all night? The body needs sleep, we know that. Why do we go without food, go without water? Simply to teach ourselves that we are not just a stimulus response reaction. We are not Pavlov's dogs. There's a consciousness in us. There's a purpose of our life that is not just eat, drink, respond to instinct. And in our spiritual practices, that's where we gain that ability. We all know you're going to go back to eating again. We all know you're going to drink water again. We know you're going to sleep again. But the reason that we practice these austerities is to have the experience of my stomach is growling. It's sending all the chemical and electrical patterns that say eat. But today is my fast. I'm not eating. And the signals come, the temptations come, you smell the food. But you know, today is my fast. And what that does is it develops an awareness within that says, yeah, my body may be screaming for food, may be screaming for water, may be screaming for sleep. But I'm sitting up all night doing japa. It's Shivaratri. It's Purnima. It's whatever day I've decided I'm going to sit up all night. My body may be screaming, but I'm fasting. And it's not about torturing the body. People think of penance and austerity as this way of torturing ourselves. No. It's simply to give us the experience of all of the neurons are firing. They're all saying, eat, drink, sleep. And I'm not doing it. And look, I'm still here. The wave comes, the wave that says eat comes, the wave that says sleep comes. I don't respond. And I'm still here. There is an I that is not the response to the stimulus. There is an I that is not just the feeder of my desires. And when we connect with that, then that stays with us through our lives, even though, of course, we go back to sleeping, we go back to eating. But just the awareness. You know, when I first came to Rishikesh, we have these prayers in the satsang hall in the morning from 5 to 6, and they're no longer compulsory because we have so many other yoga and meditation programs now that run at the same time in English. But at that time, they were compulsory. And I was not used to sitting on the floor, and it's an hour. And as I would sit, I could sit about 25 or 30 minutes before my knee and my hip started just screaming in pain. And most of the time, what I would do when that happened was I would just change the cross of my legs or sit in a different position. But every once in a while, I developed a meditation technique of I will not change my legs. Doesn't matter how much it hurts, doesn't matter how much my hip is burning or my knee is screaming. I will not change my legs. I will not move. I don't care if I'm itching. I don't care if there's a fly on my nose. I will not budge. And it's an incredible experience, and it's one that I really recommend, even though normally in our meditation, if you need to change the cross of your legs, you do it so that you can go back to having your awareness be on your mantra or be on your breath or be on the divine. We don't want our awareness and our meditation to be on our knees or hips. But every once in a while, It's an incredible practice to just set an alarm and say, until this alarm goes off, I am not budging. Because what it does is, the pain comes, the itch comes, and you look at it. You don't push it away. And this is really the fundamental key that I'm getting at. When the temptations come, we don't push them away. It's not the, I'm not going to think about chocolate. Because then, as I always say, what are we doing? Thinking about chocolate. I mean, the center of my awareness is still chocolate, whether I'm thinking about chocolate or not thinking about chocolate. My consciousness is still filled with chocolate. If I say to you, meditate, but whatever you do, don't think about ice cream. Well, what are you going to think about? Ice cream. Even if what you're doing is not thinking about ice cream, your consciousness is now full of ice cream. So it's not about pushing that away. It's actually about recognizing it, seeing it, acknowledging it, but not giving into it, knowing it's just, it's a reaction. It's there, whether it's a reaction of my body, an itch to move my leg, to move my hip, to eat something, whether it's a temptation that's come because of the media, because of advertising. Whoever's given me this temptation, and whether it's a temptation just to scratch my leg or smoke a cigarette or drink alcohol or cheat on my spouse or cheat on my taxes or whatever I'm tempted to do, we don't get anywhere by pretending it's not there. When we really, really win is when we can look at it, see it, and not be overpowered by it. And that was the technique I developed in my meditation, was instead of trying to ignore my hip or ignore my knee, I would literally turn that into my meditation. I would stare at, in my mind, at my hip that was hurting or at my knee that was hurting. And what you find is, when you actually look at it, the power becomes much less. It's very macho when your back is turned, shouting at you from behind your back. But the minute you actually turn around and stare at it, it's nothing but an itch or a pack of cigarettes or a piece of cake or whatever. And to recognize you are divine. We spent all of last night talking about that. You are divine. You are not a slave to a chemical and electrical pattern in the brain. And here's the exciting part. And I'll end this piece with this. Here's the exciting part. Habits form in our mind. This is what we call in spiritual semantics, we call it a sanskara. In scientific semantics, we call it a neuronal network or a neuronal pattern. And here's the exciting part. We can change them. If every time you are tempted to eat chocolate, you do, what you are doing is strengthening the pattern that says, when this network fires, I eat. Similarly, if every time you feel angry, you throw a temper tantrum, you're doing the same thing. If every time you feel angry, you slap someone. The Western model of psychology says, let it out. You need to get it out. You're not getting it out. It's not going anywhere. You can't, unfortunately, vomit out your anger or pain. People try, cannot do it. Doesn't get out. What it does is it lays an even stronger network and pattern that says, this is how I respond to anger. And every time you do it, You strengthen that network. You deepen that sanskara. And so the way not to do it is actually to lay a different sanskara, a different pattern. So instead of having a temper tantrum every time I get angry, I sit down, I close my eyes, I breathe, I chant my mantra. I take a walk in the park, I light a candle. Whatever I do. Put $10 in my charity jar. Let some charity benefit as I overcome my anger. Whatever it is, you lay a new pattern. And slowly, 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 that pattern becomes deeper than the previous one. And this is the way that we do it. Not by pushing it away or controlling it through discipline. Because all that does is it just causes you to contract. Then there's so many things in the world that you're contracted from. And spirituality is not about contraction. It's not about withdrawal. It's about openness. But it's about openness with the awareness that the path of divinity, the path of spirituality, the path of devotion, the path of yoga has so much more to offer. The joy I get from a piece of chocolate cake is nothing compared to the joy that I get in my spiritual practice. So it's not a path of renouncing joy. It's a path of experiencing a much greater one. And that's what we do. So it's not about pushing things away, but rather embracing something that is much deeper, much fuller, and much more real. And then the temptations just drop off automatically.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How do I strengthen and multiply my authentic connection with others? Connection, by definition, connections are authentic. Children don't scam each other. Children are very honest. They love you, you know it. They don't love you, you know it. They're very happy to have you in their face or to be in their arms, you know it. They're not happy to have you in their face or to be taken into your arms, you know it. What happens as we grow is we start becoming very, very calculative. It's not bad. It doesn't mean that we're bad people or that we're not honest people. It's just that there are other aspects that we take into consideration. Children take one thing into consideration: truth. I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. May not be the right time, may not be the polite time, may not be the scheduled time. No problem. My truth in the moment is I'm hungry. I'm going to eat. If you try to come between me and eating, I'm going to scream. Truth. That's how children are. It's always, always authentic. But what happens is as we get older, we start to calculate. So I'm hungry, but what are they going to think of me? I'm hungry, but I shouldn't eat because I'm on a diet. I'm hungry, but if I eat now, I won't be able to eat dinner later. There's a special dinner being planned later. Whatever the situation is, other things start to come into our mind. And the same thing happens in our relationships. We start to really bring into that which is true calculations. And this is where we lose authenticity. This is where we lose the real connection. I love you, but what if you hurt me? What if you leave me? Is it safe to love you? I love you, but you're not always nice to me. And when you're not nice to me, it hurts me. And so when I get hurt, instead of being honest about the fact that A, I love you, and B, that my hurt stems from my attachment to how you behave, what I do is I start to figure out how I can act to get you to do what I want you to do. So we actually become very, very manipulative. What we know is, well, if I scream, and this, you know, you live with people long enough, you start to know how they tick, what their buttons are. If I scream, he ignores me. But if I just sit here and sulk, if I don't eat dinner, if I mope about the house, he's going to feel very bad. And so we actually start to calculate what to do based not on the truth of the moment, but on what's going to get us what we want and what we think we need. We bargain with our emotions. We bargain with actual physical things. You hurt me. Therefore, I didn't make you your special dessert that I was going to make you. Or the opposite. You hurt me, and look, I made you your special dessert that you love. See what a better person I am than you are. Don't you feel so guilty that you hurt me? So we cloud honest connection and honest emotion with so much else. And the way to go back to being authentic is really just to be authentic, to ask ourselves in every moment, is this real? How many of us have had a fight with a loved one? And the anger is gone. the anger dissipates. Whether it's a child who happens to be missing their two front teeth and they just give you that, you know, kind of toothless smile, and you were angry, but you can't actually look at the toothless smile and still be angry. And yet, what you know is, if I stop being angry, they're not going to take me seriously. They're not going to know that I'm really mad. And so we don't allow ourselves to actually act out of the love. We keep manipulating the situation. If I let him off the hook this easily, this dime, I'm going to lose total control of my whole house. He'll never clean up. He'll never be home on time. He'll never be honest. He'll never, whatever it is, he'll never do his chores. So we use emotions to get what we want out of people. So when we talk about being authentic in our connection, it's not rocket science. It's not that we have to bring authenticity in from thin air or manifest authenticity. All we have to do is give up the manipulation. And it's relatively easy to do. It tends not to be very, very deeply rooted stuff all the time. Most of it's just how we've learned to behave with people around us to keep ourselves safe. I may love you a lot more than I admit, because if I admit how much I love you and you don't love me that much, I'm weak. And if I'm weak, you could hurt me. How many of us have pretended not to care? Either to protect ourselves, or as some sort of ridiculous technique to make the other one care more. Right? You have to play hard to get, or they won't be interested. This is what, as women, we're taught from the time we're very young. If you admit that you love them, you admit that you're interested, they're never interested. You have to play hard to get. So we're really sadly trained from a very young age to be inauthentic. If you're authentic, you get hurt. But the truth is, when we're not authentic, we get hurt on a much deeper level. If I love you more than you love me, okay, that might hurt. But that's going to hurt whether I admit it to you or not. It's not like it's going to hurt me more because you know how much I love you. It's just my ego that's going to hurt there. And if I am authentic about how much I love you, if I am authentic about how I feel, about what I want, what I need, sure, I run the risk of scaring you off. I run the risk of tapping into your issues, your dysfunctions. Maybe you're afraid of being loved too much and you're going to run as fast as you can in the other direction. But then in the long run, it wasn't going to work out anyway. I mean, at some point, we have to be authentic. How long are we prepared to be in inauthentic relationships just to protect ourselves? If I show you who I really am, you're not going to love me as much. I have to put on this show, because if I don't put on this show, you're not going to love me. I know it. You're going to leave me. So my choice is either I live my life inauthentically, just in some sort of deranged perception that that's going to prevent people from leaving me. Or I take a risk that says, I'd rather you leave me if who I am is not what you love. I'd rather take a risk of showing you who I really am so you can make an honest decision. I'm more afraid of living an inauthentic life than I am by being left by someone I had just tricked into liking me anyway. That's courage. But courage stems from the root of cœur, which means heart in French, and it's about having an open heart. Real courage is having an open heart. So to have authentic relationships, we have to have courage. We have to be prepared to be open, to be vulnerable, to be authentic, to take the risk that not everyone is going to love us. That, yeah, we're deep, and yeah, we're complex, and yeah, we may not be always nice. We may not always spread loving kindness. Sometimes we may lose our temper. Sometimes we may want to lose our temper. Even if we meditate.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. I remember when I was studying at Stanford, I used to go down to Esalen, which is this wonderful center a few hours south of San Francisco. And I would do these weekend meditation retreats that at the time were being taught mostly by Buddhist lamas. And they were these beautiful weekends of meditation. And so frequently they were focused on loving kindness. And the lamas would have us spend hours just in meditation, experiencing loving kindness, taking the world into our heart, taking ourselves into our heart, taking everyone into our heart. You spend, 48, 72 hours doing this, and you just feel like, I'm nothing but loving kindness. And then I'd leave from Esalen, and I would turn left onto the highway to take me back up to Stanford. And those of you who have ever driven the California coast at that part know it's probably the most beautiful highway in the world. But it's one lane in each direction. It's a mountainous road with the mountains on one side and the Pacific Ocean on the other side. And so it's one lane and no passing. And inevitably, in the great drama of the divine, within 10, 15 minutes of turning out of Esalen, I would come behind a car going, 8 miles an hour, or some RV being driven by senior citizens who had the audacity to go on vacation. And, And as I would come upon them, and I'm, of course, you know, moving along at a proper speed. I've got to get back. I've got homework. I've got school the next morning. I've been away for the weekend. I would start calculating how many hours at 8 miles an hour it was going to take me to get back, and how much past midnight I was going to get back, and what work wasn't going to get done, and how dead I was going to be at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning without my work done. And within 30 minutes of pulling out of Esalen, not only couldn't I keep loving kindness extended to people in far-off countries, but I wasn't even able to extend it to the old lady driving the car in front of me. I mean, I was prepared to strangle them and rear-end them. I mean, just if nobody would know, you would just bump them right off the road so you could pass. And it just, it makes you realize how human we are. And yeah, how nice it would be after a weekend of meditation to just experience nothing but loving kindness forever, to be done, to be there. But we're not. We're human. And meditation is not the antidote to humanity. No matter how many hours you meditate, you're still human. And being human is beautiful. But in order for us to actually embrace and awaken and blossom in the fullness of our humanity, we have to be honest about it. If we pretend that we don't want to strangle this lady and that it's all good, no problem, no problem. Yeah, that's all right. I didn't really have to get that homework done anyway. Yeah, no problem. I can fail the exam in the morning. That's okay. It's all God's divine plan. No problem. I could fail out of school. Who cares? It's all perfect. If we try to do that, not only are we cheating the people around us because we're depriving them of connecting with us. We've put up a wall. We've put on a costume. We're reciting lines. We're reading a script. But we've deprived ourselves of connecting with ourselves. And it doesn't mean that we're never going to get to a point where, yeah, it is all okay. And yes, you can get stuck in traffic, and yes, you can have missed airplanes, and yes, bad things can happen, and you can still be okay. We can get there. And when we get there, that will be authentic. But wherever we are at that moment, that's what we have to be honest about. And if we don't, we're depriving ourselves and the other of having a real connection, of having a deep connection. And so when you say, how do I have authentic connections? Just by constantly checking in with myself. Is this honest? Is this really where I'm at? And if not, okay. There's a lot to be said for acting as if. They've actually done studies where they give people a pen and they say, hold this pen in your mouth. Simple act of holding a pen between your teeth, which sort of mimics a smile, actually changes in a statistically significant way people's emotional state. Because what it does is it sends a message to our brain. Our brain doesn't necessarily know, the emotional center of our brain doesn't know, oh, you're just doing this because it's a psychological test. The brain thinks I'm smiling. I mean, all the same muscles are engaged. Muscles in my face, muscles in my jaw, they're all engaged, just as if I were smiling. And so my brain thinks I'm happy. But put it between my teeth, my brain thinks I'm frowning. My state of being goes down. So there is something to be said for acting as if. But even there, we have to be authentic about it. I'm feeling miserable. But what I'm going to do is just keep smiling. Not because I'm going to deny that I'm feeling sad, not because if you ask me how I am, and you're a close friend or you're a loved one, I'm going to say to you, oh, it's just great. God, you know, I lost my job and it's so perfect. Best day ever. But I'm going to be authentic with you. Yeah, it really hurt. But I'm really trying to stay. To stay in the positive, to know that I, the real I, didn't lose my job. To know that the real I is still good. This is the authentic piece. Not, oh yeah, it's all wonderful. Mom's got, you know, heart disease. Great. Thanks, universe, for this great experience. No, it sucks. It's scary. It's painful. Whether it's you, your parents, your kids, your spouse, your friends. Cancer, heart disease, accidents. Divorce, getting laid off. And yet, what we're able to do is to stay checked in with who the real I is, who's not going to be left, who's not going to be abandoned, who's not going to be alone, who's not going to starve, who's not worthless. And in that, yeah, it is all okay. And yeah, it is even all beautiful. And this is how we begin to start to really connect authentically. But it's a practice. But it's a beautiful practice because the fact that we're able to connect with others authentically is a bonus. We begin by deeply and authentically connecting with ourselves. And that's the main thing, because if we're not authentic with ourselves, there's no point of life. I mean, then really, why bother? I mean, if we're just playing a role, if we're just acting it out, why bother? Why be you? God has created you, your exact package. All the challenges, all the weaknesses, all the issues, all the junk, all the stuff we wish that we didn't have. But God's created you just like that. If we all lived, you know, the Brady Bunch life, wouldn't be nearly as interesting, wouldn't be nearly as deep, wouldn't be nearly as real. So we connect with that authenticity within ourselves. And the last piece of this is, interestingly, when we actually are able to connect and embrace it and not push it away and not hate it, it actually heals. The more we push that stuff away, the bigger it becomes. Then it's this darkness that's kind of looming over us because we're not looking at it. The minute we open our eyes and open our curtains to see it, it actually starts to heal. And in some cases, it even dissipates altogether. The light is all it needs. And, you know, it starts to melt. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.